That gavel doesn't.
Thank you, ladies.
The hour of 6 o'clock having arrived, we will call the meeting to order. I think what we'll do, since we do not have a quorum at this time, we will recess to the call of the chair until we have full coffee cups, cookies, and a majority to vote for the bill.
Mr. Chairman, can we vote on the bill before we caffeinate the members of the committee?
We're going to get them cranked up.
I'd move the bill right now if it'd be helpful, Pat.
1 a.m., is that okay?
We will recess to the call of the chair, hopefully by 6:10, 6:15 in there sometime. I don't like this.
Is this somebody presenting their first bill?
No. I thought we were going to be here all night making Past Life of Living Hell, but I'm not sure.
Make sure you give your bakery a shout out.
Get some coffee, get some cookies, and rip some pork and broth. Everybody out.
I know it.
Abigail, will you get Jenna cookies, please?
Of course. I know. Don't think I do that on purpose. Which color would you like?
I saw that.
Thanks
a lot. Representative Portman. Real happen now.
Thank you.
Real
happen now. Wow.
That's important.
The dairy farm.
You're nice.
Big deal.
She asked real happen now. You know that was part of the deal.
One of my members of my caucus, when I told him I was bringing cookies, the entire committee said, I'm here to live on hungry for blood.
Okay, cool.
I want a twin. Well, I think if we're short, then we should bring it to some other committee that. Where's is education reform?
No.
What? There are no cups.
No, I'll see who's going to be tomorrow.
I did, yep.
Oh, yeah. Our family was, my father was from.
Oh, boy.
My brother and I were pirate fans. My mother and my other brother and my sister.
New Bush.
Representative Brenda, is this where you're sitting right here? Okay.
Hey, Linda. Linda, I understand you have some questions about things I'm happy to talk to people about tonight. Did you get my cell or not? Remember you coerced $100 or $200 out of it.
There's a roll call.
Yeah.
You want to be here for amendments too, or just the? I don't know. We don't have an amendment.
We'll get you.
Are you in room 5, right?
No, we're in room 10.
Do you have anything?
You but they had the expensive coffee.
No, I think this is, no, it is right because Ways and Means was a meeting here, and then I negotiated with Margaret and either Ways and Means or Cat. But I think five is actually what's posted, so you might want to go down there and put a note up.
Yeah, I wanted to know someone who's tracking that.
But everybody came here, so I must have changed
it. I would have had one on the way, but they were like, submit the
shutdown.
Oh, yeah, we don't.
Thank you.
Don't want to.
My campaign.
What did she need
to do? But I, yeah, we have to.
Where is your campaign? In Brooklyn Park.
Then I put it on purpose.
Jack.
How's life going? You enjoying
it? Yeah, he gave the perfect idea. I was just sticking around. And let's go. We're with you.
Don't throw that or if you are going to accept, send me a note and say, don't defend me here, Mark. I really do have tire marks on me, trust me.
That was yum. Thank you. 10 minutes. 12 minutes. 7 minutes.
Well, here's Kurt. So.
We get a cookie?
Members get some coffee and cookies from Rip's apartment.
Well, there's decaf. One of those is decaf. Yeah.
And where's our other gavel? You know why? You know why? Because it's no, not the gavel, the other pounder.
The what? What's wrong with that one? What's wrong with that?
There's three things. I hear you
can't. Oh! Yeah, it's the only one we have.
Well, we'll make it work. Hey, take that off.
Yeah.
All right, now we go. Mark is decaf
on the left.
This should help.
Well, if you just go on the house website and then search under author, like if I wanted to do it,
yeah, that's probably.
Look around, I think I have.
Just to make sure memory's got.
Yeah, if you run the supply and get a different.
No,
that's okay. Fairly easy.
Oh yeah.
Because we had two, and I had to give one to the
alternate. Share beats that if I could defend him, that he not throw me under the bus and he's like Holbert did.
I'm gonna go trade back.
Defend him or not sending it to taxes.
Thank
you. She turns it says Representative Winchesky, you convinced me, and she threw me under the bus.
Somebody here.
Right, I got to
get a
I'm
not sure.
Yes, Greg gets it tomorrow.
I know you do.
Yeah.
Some other people may not know that, but I
actually. It's, yes.
You guys, did you know Kate Knuth was here and then she went down to Mark?
We're going to send somebody to get her before we vote. If we do a roll.
But you have her for your quorum count?
Yeah.
Does she count for quorum because
yes.
She was here?
Yes.
Okay.
2008.
I'm going to steal it back from the Yardall Committee.
2008.
I'm going to take it back for you.
U.S. Department of Education, National Center for Education Statistics. In 6 states,
I'll bring it back.
Expect a smaller
we need it.
Representative Yardall can't have it.
That's really important.
Where's my
pen?
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we have a
Here it is.
44 of these.
Very nice.
New Hampshire and Hawaii. Yeah, we're really generous.
Okay. Thanks.
You did fine.
open and it's back there. Table, so.
Pretty good for guys.
Yeah, no, I'll feel a lot better.
Everybody's.
Yeah.
You know, I know. Everybody.
I'm not coming in as the old office I would. Take the day.
Well, no, it's
yeah,
not
stay
that.
And stay until. Until further notice. Until further notice.
The governor's plans are full of action.
There you go. Yeah. That's right. That's right. It will be.
Most all of them I have.
All those DOR people are just their tips of all.
Which section?
Which section is the tax part?
Which article?
Which article?
Or is it all
over?
I mean, I think
that's all.
Sit next to
me.
I know.
We're getting off.
Well, I'm sure that I always leave some things with other people.
He's one of them. Okay, so I'm in the right. I thought he was in Minnesota. So he's not Minnesota man.
Yeah.
But
no.
No.
He's actually hired by, I think, the Minnesota.
Is that how it goes?
No, yeah.
I'm trying to get
it. Yeah.
So, the one that's happening. So that's why last year Hanson would show up Hanson. Because it was Hanson the Minnesota man, which is now what's his name?
Showalter.
So Showalter is the new Hanson, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then Hanson is the Minnesota Council of Economic
Development. Yes, he's responsible for the
work. Okay. And how many people are in the
Minnesota Council?
I've not been to some of their meetings.
I'm really curious.
They talk revenue. Bill Marks is part of it.
He is?
Yes, he is part of it, and so is his senior partner.
No.
And so our numbers have front part of revenue.
Wow,
I've got to
get
it. You need to get hooked in.
I'll take it for 15 years.
If you're being impatient, then
sort of associating it with it.
It's the gavel. It doesn't have. We'll reconvene the meeting. We'll call it back to order. We do have a quorum. So Representative Bills moves the minutes of March 19th. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The cookies are provided by Representative Hortman. We thank you. And we brought the coffee, so that's please enjoy. Okay, with that, Representative Garofalo, Chair Garofalo, will move House File 934. And before we get started with his presentation, I would just say the next Tax Committee meeting will be at the call of the Chair. We don't have any set dates at this time, so please check your emails. You will be notified properly. So the only bill we have up today, members, is House File 934, and I would just like to announce that, members, I'd really like to keep it to the tax issues. I'd really like to keep to the tax issues, and so if I feel someone is not, you know, concentrating on the tax issues, I'll try to bring you back to the tax issues. If I have any luck at that or not, we'll see. Okay, so with that, welcome to the committee, Chair Garofalo. Chair Garofalo moves HF 934. If you could please start to present your bill to the tax issues.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move House File 934 for passage and referral to the Ways and Means Committee. And first of all, I want to thank the Chair and Representative Hortman for caffeinating and sugaring up the entire committee before this presentation. I'm greatly appreciative of that.
You're welcome.
Members, just there's a very nice, concise summary in your bill, or in your folder, 2011 Property Tax Related Issues, Education Finance Bill, House File 934, just very quickly covering some of the highlights on that. You'll notice that there's a definitional change for the property tax recognition shift the governor proposed that we have accepted regarding whether you use gross or net before rebates. In addition, because of the change in pupil counts, you'll also notice some tracking items with regards to that. There is an increase in the equalization factor for the operating capital levy, currently at $10,700. That is bumped up to $12,790. In addition, the alternative facilities aid and levy program is shifted to a levy program, And the net of these and other changes that are contained in this bill is a levy target of zero for this committee. There's many other items in the bill. If I could just briefly talk about something that doesn't show up on your spreadsheets is with regards to the area of teacher effectiveness and with regards to how that's going to be playing out this session. We've had a lot of quite a bit of conversations regarding that, and Representative Brandon Peterson has done a great job on that.
And Chair Garofalo, teacher effectiveness,
yep.
What does that have to do with tax policy?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's an important part of the bill, and it has nothing to do with tax policy, and I'm done with my comments, Mr. Chairman.
Well, if you could keep it to the tax issues, please. I'm sure there's many good parts of the bill. We're looking at the tax issues today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, that's a very brief overview of the tax provisions. I have Mr. Strom with me here to look for. I can answer, try to answer questions, and have Mr. Strom answer them as well.
Thank you, Chair Garofalo, and if members could ask questions to the author regarding tax provisions. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and Representative Garofalo, maybe Mr. Strom, not everyone has served on education finance that's on here. Would you explain a little bit what that equalizing factor is and how that works, not only on these levies, but also on referendums and debt service? Just to give a quick little bit, and then I have one question after that.
Chair Garofalo.
How about I do debt service and you do operating capital? Is that fair? Sure. So what happens is right now to assist school districts with their bonding costs, there's a debt service equalization formula that exists in statute where just briefly we take the adjusted net tax capacity on a per pupil basis and we come up with a number, and then we equalize that based on two tiers related to their debt. Equalizing factor of 3,200 for the first 15, yep. And then from from 15 to 25 is equalized at a higher number, and then once you get over 25%, I think it's equalized at $8,000. And again, that factor, what it is in equalizing is it's complete adjusted net tax capacity for the school district. You divide it by the pupil counts, and that gives you your factor that it works off of. So an ideal district would be a high debt, low property wealth, low student count area would generate the most equalization. A district that was low in pupil units, low in debt, and had high property value would be the opposite of it. That's the debt service equalization program. Mr. Strom, if you want to talk about
it. Mr. Strom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The operating capital equalizing factor is...
Please state your name for the record.
I'm
who you represent,
Strom,
please.
House Research.
Thank you, sir.
The operating capital equalizing factor has been in statute since that program had a levy added to it in the early 2000s. The equalizing factor, by increasing that from 10,700 to 12,790, essentially increases the state aid that goes out under that program. So all districts in the state participate in the operating capital program, so they'd all have a slightly lower levy by a statewide total of $16.8 million on that program because the higher equalizing factor means more state aid and a smaller local levy for them.
Representative Marquardt?
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. And I was just wondering, you know, one of the reasons that property taxes have been going up is that these equalization levels are frozen. So, like what Representative Garofalo said, on the debt levy, for example, at 3,200, if your district was, when you went into it, was at, let's say, 1,600 per pupil, that's 50% of that 3,200. So the state would cover 50, and the local school district would cover 50. But what happens, and I've seen it in some of the areas, districts in my area, is you might have declining student enrollment, and market values are going up. So it makes the district look wealthier per student. So now instead of being 1,600, you might actually be up to 3,200. So when you told the voters a few years before that the state would pick up 50%, now all of a sudden, as your enrollment's gone down and your values have gone up, which they had, all of a sudden you might be covering 100% and the state isn't doing anything. And so my question is, and I know there were some bills out there, did you think at all of doing an inflationary factor? Because I think there was one, I forget whose bill that was, that I saw introduced that kind of did an inflationary with, as market values went up, that equalization level would go up so it would keep kind of things in line. So I was just wondering if Representative Garofalo had entertained any of those proposals.
Chairman Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Marquardt, it's interesting because, of course, for years, many people have been looking for inflationary factors to be put into this equation. And then when we had this real estate bubble and values started going down, people said, well, no, don't. Let's not go with quite tracking inflation just right now. The flip side to this, Representative Marquardt, is when you have a target, you have to account for the spending. And if we spend money on those dollars, it's not additional dollars into the classroom. It shows up on our spreadsheets as a greater expenditure. But what it is the difference between levy and aid. So we did not do that. But even outside of that, Representative Marquardt, if you look at the forecast appropriations, there's no changes in law that are proposed in this bill. But if you look at the forecast appropriations, you'll see that debt service equalization, and I'm pretty sure the referendum equalization, I'm not sure, those are actually going up under this bill. Not because of any policy changes we're making, but because of market forces.
Representative Marquardt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Paymar?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo, can you talk a little bit about the alternative facilities aid being eliminated and how that would impact my school district? And then I guess my second question would deal with the repeal of the integration aid and also what that would do to my district relative to local taxes, local property taxes.
Chairman Garofalo.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and Representative Paymar, the repeal of the alternative facilities aid is going to put you on par with the other school districts in the state with regards to the programs that Representative Marquardt was just discussing in terms of equalization. So that's on a statewide basis, the target is zero, but I think it's just being candid with Representative Paymar, obviously the recipients of that program would not see a zero target. There would be a transfer from aid to levy in those communities.
Representative Paymar?
Is a $3.7 million, does that sound accurate to you?
I do not have
Chair Garofalo
in front of me. Well, actually, I do, and just pulling it off the top of my head, Representative Paymar. Three seven is the right number.
Representative Paymar?
So, Ms. Chair, Representative Graf, that would be a cut to the St. Paul School District, basically, of $3.7 million.
Chair Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Paymar, the... Again, on a statewide basis, we adjusted it using the operating capital, but just like with the education bill that passed last year, there were divergent impacts on individual school districts, but we netted this out using the operating capital to say that there was a statewide impact of zero. But yes, individual school districts have different impacts. So yes, there are districts which would see, you could say, a property tax reduction and others that would have it increase, and that was the same template that was used in the education bill of 2010.
Representative Paymar?
So, Mr. Chair, in other words, we'll see an increase. And then say something about the integration aid.
Representative Garofalo?
With regards to the, and let me just double check the tracking sheet here. And this is where we get into the forward shifting of levies. And I believe what is happening is there's going to be Mr. Strom, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but due to integration, there's going to be a reduction in the integration levy because of the forward shift nature of this? Or maybe, why don't I just let Mr. Strom answer the question?
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, Tim Strom from House Research. On the integration program, it's currently a program where 70% of the money comes through the aid and 30% through the local property tax levy. Under the proposal in front of you tonight for the Minneapolis and St. Paul school districts, the entire aid portion of the revenue is being eliminated. So your property tax levy portion will be unchanged, but the revenue amount will be a decrease in revenue to your district of the aid amount, which was 70% of the total integration revenue for your district, or about $13 million per year.
Representative Garofalo?
Why is it then that the integration number has a negative target on the levy then?
Mr. Strom?
I'm sorry, I don't mean to make the questions more complicated.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, Tim Strom from House Research. The integration levy, part of that is forward shifted, and so there are some shift effects involved with that. But generally speaking, I think on the...
The directions and pupils?
Yeah, so okay. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Mr. Crow reminds me that the small reduction that's showing up in the levy there is because of fewer pupils expected in the first-class city school districts because of the low-income student scholarship provisions.
Representative Kamar?
Mr. Chair, I don't want to... It's kind of hard to not talk about policy when you're talking about some of this, but
Hey, Mike, can you use your mic?
What?
Can you use your mic?
Oh,
I'm sorry.
I was just saying to the chair, it's a little hard to, you know, not integrate some of the policy questions in here because the assumption is through your voucher proposal that is limited to, if I understand correctly, St. Paul and Minneapolis, and then the repeal of the integration aid. I mean, that's, you know, that's been a successful model in St. Paul. I don't know where or why you've chosen to target, you know, Minneapolis and St. Paul, although it seems to be a frequent target in the legislature this year. But I, you know, it seems to me it's a $26 million reduction. And there's some assumptions here about this voucher program that I'm not sure where you're getting them, but I'm not on the K-12 committee, but I just at first glance and from talking to, you know, my folks in St. Paul, it's not something they're particularly happy with, and it just seems, I guess I'd like an explanation.
Sure. Mr. Chairman?
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Paymar, with regards to the assumptions, those are off of fiscal notes.
They're what?
From fiscal notes, the Department of Education. That's where the fiscal note assumptions are for the low opportunity, the scholarships.
Representative Paymar?
So kids are going to be going from public schools to, and they're going to use these vouchers and go to private schools then in St. Paul, and that's going to be a savings to the school district. Is that the assumption?
Representative Groffel?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Paymar, students that are in certain schools where there have been low-performing results will have the opportunity to use those scholarships to attend other schools, and there would be lower pupil counts under that assumption.
Representative Paymar?
I guess the commissioner was quite critical of your bill and specifically stated that your bill targets cities of the first class, and, you know, those are just a couple of areas that to me, you know, stick out like a sore thumb, and I guess that's your decision as a K-12 chair if that's what you want to do, but I guess that's it for now.
Mr. Chairman, I want to keep it to the text. I mean, I want to be respectful of the chair and the committee, but I just want to make a point. First of all, number one, Commissioner Caselius has been a delight to work with. She's doing a fantastic job, and I'm confident that the legislature and Governor Dayton are going to do some really good stuff on education. So I'm proud to work with her. We got a great working relationship. But Representative Paymar, I do want to point out to you that some of the schools that get the biggest funding increases in the state of Minnesota under this bill are in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Now, they may be charter schools, but those are publicly funded schools and are getting some of the biggest increases. So I understand your point, and that is well taken, but I'll just leave it at that. We're in the tax committee, but it's important for me, Representative Paymar, that you know that. So thank you.
Representative Paymar?
No, that's it for now.
Representative Biskins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chair Garofalo, I would go back to the alternative facilities. I believe there's 350 more or less school districts in the state of Minnesota. How many school districts qualify for this alternative facilities levy?
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Biskins, I think the number is 23. Now, those 23, and I don't know if this is a follow-up, Representative Biskins, but of those 23, 7 qualify for aid.
Representative Biskins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Chair Garofalo. So while we eliminate the aid portion, did you change anything in the bill, or do those 23 school districts still have discretionary levy authority that 320-some school districts in the state do not have?
Chair Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Biskins, we did not alter that. In addition, we did not, and I'm going by memory here, so Mr. Strom, just please correct me if I'm wrong, but I actually think that Minneapolis and St. Paul have their own sort of super discretionary levy authority where they can issue $10 million in bonds outside of the voters, if I remember right. And if I'm mistaken on that, I'd be corrected. But we did not alter that either, Representative Biskins.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Switching gears, Representative Garofalo, there's been quite a bit of discussion in the last few years, and Representative Winchesky and I both agreed on this, that there's been some problems with the levy language dealing with other post-employment benefits. Has there been any change to the language? Does your bill address any changes to that language for that discretionary levy for other post-employment benefits?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Biskins. No, I didn't make any changes to that.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One final question, Chair Garofalo. Does your bill contain any new discretionary levy authority?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Biskins, no, it does not, but I want to be candid that the aid portion of the seven districts affected by the alternative facilities, that's existing levy authority but could be interpreted by others to be of that nature. But the answer to your question, Representative Biskins, if I understand, is no.
Okay.
Representative Biskins?
Well, and thank you.
Oh, no,
Mr.
excuse
Chair.
Me. My apologies, Representative Biskins.
Representative Garofalo?
There is a provision regarding the Ties building in St. Paul where districts have been able to levy to be part of that building, be part of that. We're allowing them, they have an asset now that they need to preserve. There's maintenance costs. So there is a statewide $625,000 of additional discretionary levy authority for those members who belong to Ties, because it was assumed, because it's the bonds have been defeased. And I could let Mr. Strom address that, but I think that $625,000, that would be construed as a discretionary levy authority, Representative Biskins.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Strom, is that per member district, or is that total discretionary levy that then is apportioned to each district on a percentage basis?
Mr. Strom?
Representative Biskins, that's the total levy for the 31 districts that are members of Ties. So it's $600,000 per year in total for the next 11 years for those 31 members, and they apportion the levy on the basis of their pupil counts.
Okay. And
Representative Biskins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Strom, is that equalized?
Mr. Chair, Representative
Mr. Strom?
Biskins, no.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Biskins.
Chairman.
I have Loeffler, Hartman, Dabney, Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have some specific questions about the area I represent, but also about the general bill. But this committee is really used to dealing with what Chair Garofalo described as divergent impacts. But we're used to seeing, and I think we've seen many, many of them in this committee, 34-page analysis that shows by community, by type of city, by area, what the property tax impacts are. And particularly in a bill that has, it sounds like, very divergent interests and impacts, I think that we ought to be able to have those kind of runs here, because it's very hard to have an understanding of how the interaction of the education bill, which seems to target, we know, certain communities that are also hit hard in the property tax bill and the portions of the tax bill we passed on Saturday. It seems to me that we ought to have in front of the public and in front of our discussion what the combined impact of that is on property taxpayers. And I think it will have some interactive impacts on both the PTR and the renter's credit, because we know where low-income families tend to cluster, and I would expect that we would see disparate impacts on the applications for those programs, as well as disparate impacts on the levies by community. And is it possible for us to have House Research work with the Education Committee to model that, so we would understand how different parts of the state are going to be impacted and what the total property tax bill is in any one area? I mean, I think all of us, when we go back to our districts, they want to know, so what did you do? Are you going to lower my taxes or are you going to raise them? And we've always been able to give them a general sense of that based on the nonpartisan analysis in front of us.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Mr. Hines, to the Loeffler question.
Mr. Chair, I'd really yield to Mr. Strom, who would be the key person who would be able to
to know if that's possible or not.
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lothman, yes, this is something that's on our list. I will be providing Mr. Hines with a list of the school levy changes. The majority of the districts will see very little change from the K-12 bill. It's really the big changes are going to be in those seven districts that are losing their alternative facilities aid. But I will be providing Mr. Hines with a estimated pay 2012 school levy file, hopefully in the pretty near future here.
Representative Loeffler.
Okay, thank you. And since we weren't given a summary of the bill, and my understanding of what's in the bill is somewhat related to what I've read in the paper, and I don't know if it's undergone changes since, but my understanding is that there are some special provisions that target the central cities in terms of the elimination of integration aid, and given their disproportionate shares of special ed populations, I suspect that and the adult basic education programs fall heavily on them. And so the question I would have is there allowance for or expectation that the property taxpayers will step up to replace the lost state aid that are targeted at the central city schools?
Mr. Representative Grafflow?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Loeffler, for many years before I came here, Minneapolis and St. Paul, in regards to the education areas, have been given extra levy authority that other communities in the state have not had. And if it's your goal to see that extra levy authority revoked, I would encourage you to bring that bill to the committee, or perhaps offer me as an amendment on the House floor, and we can take a look at that. With regards to you brought up the integration portion of it. It's important that members understand that in statute, the former integration program, which is now being transitioned to innovation, has been deemed by the Office of the Legislative Auditor, not by Pat Grafflow or by other Republicans, as an inefficient program. We've spent over $1 billion on it, and it hasn't worked. So what we're doing is we are repurposing those dollars, and we're repurposing them for innovation, and we're specifically focusing, and I'm leaving the purview of this committee, I apologize, Mr. Chairman, but it's important that my friend, Representative Loeffler, I want her to know this, that it's focused specifically on the achievement gap, that it's focused specifically on student achievement and student learning. Now, with regards to the old formula, we had two districts that, in statute, not by formula, not by meeting certain criteria, we're given $435 per pupil. And what we have done is even members of the minority party have been quoted in the paper as saying that needs to change. You cannot have that level of disparity between the five categories that existed, $435 per pupil, $206, $129, $92, and zero. And there is just a fundamental disconnect. If we were creating a program today, we would never create the program that way. And so that is something that we are looking at. But I would repeat to my friend, it's important to me that you do know that when you look at this bill in its totality, some of the charter schools, well, the charter schools in Minneapolis and St. Paul receive some of the biggest funding increases of all the schools in the state. It's just important for me that you know that.
Well, Mr. Chair, to that, and I'm not going to get into debating education policy because I agree this isn't the committee and I don't pretend to be a formula expert. Once upon a time I was, but I don't pretend to ever be near that now. But to your last point, I have to say Minneapolis has some of the best charter schools and some of the worst, and some of them should have been put out of business a long time ago if you're going to talk about addressing the achievement gap. And so I think that, you know, to just say because of the label that they wear, we're going to see differences, I think, is. But my key question still is, and I'm not sure I totally understood your answer, is our property taxes in the central cities expected to rise as a result of changing state support for the current public school districts, which have the levy authority?
Chair Grafflow.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, I think it would be a fair statement on the alternative facilities portion that is transitioning from aid to levy, so yes.
Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chair, how about the special education freeze? Because I have always heard that statewide this is an issue in terms of a shift of responsibilities, and there's a legal responsibility to serve those children that show up and that meet the federal standards for special ed. And I understand that you have a freeze on that. Will that also tend to encourage school districts to increase their levies or to seek more operating levies through referendum?
Chair Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, no. But I have to expound on that answer. First of all, if we look historically, and again, Mr. Chairman, I apologize for leaving the purview of this committee, but I feel the need to explain my answer. If you look at special education costs historically, there is no revenue stream into the state of Minnesota that can meet the growth that has been occurring in those areas. So saying that we are going to alleviate pressure on an unsustainable growth pattern simply by putting more into it is not accurate. But to your point, I think it's also fair to say that simply capping it is not going to accomplish that. One of the things that we're doing differently this session is we are passing finance bill with some policy before the policy deadline. And Chairman Erickson and the Reform Committee are going to be moving forward on special education in terms of providing a streamlined regulatory relief, back office consolidation. We've gotten a lot of feedback from many school districts about the convoluted process we have, not frontline service reductions, but in terms of alleviating that structure. In addition, part, and I don't want to overstate this, Representative Loeffler, I don't want to overstate this, but part of this is that when we fund something, there tends to be a need to diagnose this because it generates more revenue. I'm not saying it's a majority of it. I'm not saying it's all of it. But behavior does follow the money. And in the committee's travels this year, we got an opportunity to visit school districts in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and we met students who were designated as special education in the public system, who transitioned to different schools, and with different learning techniques were able to achieve academic success. And they were, in fact, not special education. But in addition to that, and I think, and it's, again, really outside the purview of this committee, I mean, it's clear there's something going on with the rise in autism rates. Now, that's an issue, and whether it's environmental or what's going on, that's a different discussion point. But I think it's fair to say that with regards to special education, that this conversation, this is not the end because of the policy areas. We are going to be addressing this. But I think that your question is legitimate, but I want you to know that we're not done with that. This is something that Representative Greiling tackled with, you know, in her years in the chairman in her position, and something that we're going to be doing too, as we want to make sure that we're doing something there, because the expenditures are just not in a sustainable trajectory.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I understand that in serving on Health and Human Services, where we deal with lifelong care for people who have severe disabilities and other challenges in seeking employment, and our modern medical system offers opportunities for sustenance and sustained life for people with real challenges that we haven't confronted before. And both Minneapolis and St. Paul, I would say, have an incredible concentration of that, in part because of our specialized medical facilities. We have 4 children's hospitals. We have the specialists who deal with people with kids with autism and other issues, and families move to where the services are. In terms of the another area that would potentially impact county levies is, I understand that you're freezing the adult basic education, and this is an area where we refer a lot of people who would otherwise be economically dependent because they've been laid off, they're exceeded their unemployment or don't qualify for unemployment, and oftentimes they have education shortcomings that we meet and push them into adult basic education programs and GED prep programs in order to increase their chances for self-sufficiency and successful employment. And can you tell me about what the impact of that you think is, and will that increase county caseloads, have potential impacts on other systems as well as within the education system?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, as part of Governor Dayton's budget recommendations, he recommended taking the 3% increase in adult basic education down to 2. And so our modification is from 2 down to 0. In terms of the discussion of county impact and those items, I do not serve on those committees. And of course, as you know, there is interactions in those areas. I have been in conversations with the governor's office and want to make sure that we're in sync on that program. But the governor proposed taking it from 3 to 2. We took it down from 2 to 0. But it is something that will be an ongoing process.
Representative Loeffler?
Thank you. And one of the last questions, because I'm still learning on these things, but it's been dismaying to me how much we've become dependent on funding schools through special operating levy referendums. And I think almost every corner of the state has gone through those high-energy volunteer campaigns trying to get to raise property taxes to pay for basic services. Oftentimes they're computers, or they say it's going to be for the books, or it's going to be for, you know, whatever. And do you anticipate that we are going to see increased pressure in school districts to seek those from their voters this year as a result of this budget?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler, this bill funds education at 99.8% of the levels that Governor Dayton does. Any interaction with property taxes, I would assume on a state, my expectation would be the same to the levels that the governor is proposing.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's not the job of this committee. I have no idea what Dayton's proposals were, taxes. I just wanted an honest answer of, do you expect to have more pressure for school districts to go forward and ask for increased property taxes from their voters? And it may, if it's the same answer with Governor Dayton, I still would like to know what it is, because I don't sit on education.
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Loeffler, I think that if you look in this bill, and I apologize once again, Mr. Chairman, because we're moving into items of the bill. If you look at the areas of mandate relief that we're offering school districts, historically we've been very tight-fisted about what they do with specific funds. For the next 2 years, we're saying if you've got a fund, you got money sitting in it outside of community, what was the one, the community, outside of the community food service fund, if it doesn't cause any state interactions, if you want to transfer those dollars to be in the most flexible manner, I think that's going to alleviate pressure in those areas. My expectation would be that that I think we'll have to see how this session plays out, and we'll have to see how the economy does. But I don't think, with regards to interaction of what property taxes are going to take place, I don't believe so.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you. Well, it sounds like there's, at least for some school districts who have certain funds, there's some one-time-only solutions. But I think, from what I hear from my parents, they're looking for longer-term solutions to funding schools. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Garofalo, I'm having a really hard time hearing you. So
I'm sorry.
That's all right. If you can use the microphone or speak up, I don't know.
I should have had some cookies and coffee.
You should have. I have a couple questions. I don't know a lot about the K-12 formulas either, having never served on K-12 finance. But from what I understood, districts with that currently receive alternative facilities aid will see a property tax increase because there's a transfer from aid to levy. And my question is, which school districts are going to see their property taxes go up? And I'm particularly interested in the Osseo School District and the Anoka-Hennepin School District.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hortman, there are currently 7 districts in the state that qualify for alternative facilities aid. They are Minneapolis, Anoka-Hennepin, Bloomington, Robbinsdale, Rochester, St. Paul, and Duluth. So,
Representative Hortman.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, does that mean that since I have Anoka-Hennepin, that there's a certainty of a property tax increase in your bill from my district?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hortman, I could not say a certainty because I don't know where they're at on their bond defeasance schedule.
Representative Hortman.
Their bond defeasement schedule. Can you explain to me how that would impact whether or not my property taxes are going to go up?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hortman, my understanding is that right now we over-levy in districts that have bonds to make sure that if there's a problem with abatement or a high property taxpayer isn't there. So there are situations where conceivably a district could have a surplus right now and be able to pay that down. It's probably not likely, but you're asking for a certain answer, and I can't give it to you. I do say that there's probably, for those 7 districts, they would have that transfer from aid to levy for those 7 districts.
Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, is that something that the school district has to take affirmative action, or it just happens by operation of law?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, what's the
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hortman, by action of the school board when they set their next levies during the fall for their pay 2012 levies, and the expectation is that all of the $19 million of aid will all be levied back by the seven districts that are losing that aid.
Representative Hortman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, then I'm confused because I know when Representative Biskins asked if there was any additional discretionary levy authority, you said that there was a total of $625,000, and it sounds like there's $19.6 million, and I just wonder if I'm getting that right.
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hortman, I pointed out the alternative facilities aid portion of the answer, and then when I said no, I was reminded by Mr. Strom of the ties, but I did point out the alternative facilities aid portion.
Okay, so the total is, thank you, Mr. Chair, $19 million. The alternatives facilities aid.
Mr. Representative Chairman, Representative Horton, for those seven districts, yes, but on a statewide basis, it's zero. But yes, the question that you are asking for those seven, that is the number.
Okay, and then, Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, I don't have a summary of the bill, a House research summary, and I don't have runs that show what the impact is on my district, but my districts. I represent both Osseo and Anoka Hennepin, and I'm wondering if they're seeing a net increase or net decrease.
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hortman, net increase, net decrease from what? Give me a baseline to baseline.
Current funding.
Representative Hortman? Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hortman, both Osseo and Anoka Hennepin are receiving net increases.
Representative Hortman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney?
Don't you win.
President Lencheski, and Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I'd start a series of questions. Maybe start asking Mr. Strom to review the Alternative Facilities Aid program, the history of it, and how we ended up with it, so that members of this committee who probably are not well familiar with it can understand the property tax implications and the rationale behind the program.
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, the Alternative Facilities Levy Program was created in 1993. It was created as a levy program in order to get the large districts out of the health and safety revenue program, which was basically a program that allowed school districts to make fire marshal repairs and asbestos removal and other environmental repairs to their buildings. And the purpose for the Alternative Facilities Levy being created separately was because in the early 90s, the legislature capped the health and safety levy on two separate occasions in an attempt to limit school property tax increases in those years. The result was trying to put the alternative facilities levy out there so that the smaller districts would not be so affected by the actions of the larger districts. However, when that was presented by the Department of Education to the legislature, one thing was done differently that Representative Biskins alluded to, and that was that the large school districts were not only given the authority to do health and safety changes, repairs, but were also given the authority to levy without voter approval for deferred maintenance needs. And that's not something that's afforded to other school districts in the state. So that was the program that was created in 1993. In 1997, this committee, the Taxes Committee, was looking at ways to lower the commercial industrial class rate, which was, I think, at 5% at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And as part of the effort of consolidating that to 4, Mr. Hines is shaking his head, no, I may have the wrong percent there. But as part of lowering that commercial industrial tax rate, one of the things that this committee noticed through the property tax runs was that the distribution was falling differently than across different parts of the state. And so the Taxes Committee put a provision in the bill that year that took the alternative facilities levy for those districts that were bonding for those projects and replaced it with state aid for in order to reduce their levies. And the result of that was to make the class rate compression more manageable. In the following year, there were four districts that received that aid authority. In the following year, in the K-12 committee, three other districts that were in the program argued that they should receive some additional aid as well, even though they weren't doing it through bonded indebtedness. And so that in that year, the education committee approved small amounts of aid for the other three districts. And that's where the aid amounts came from.
Representative Dabney?
Mr. Chair, thank you. So, I mean, it's one of those quirks that we run into around here where something appears in one budget that actually was inserted there, not even necessarily voluntarily, by a different committee. And this is business property tax relief, as it was intended. So just as we saw, the tax bill will be at least a $74 million increase on business property taxes across the state, and possibly three or more times that. This, again, is a property tax increase for businesses and homeowners as well, the way this one is structured. I'm wondering, Representative Paymar started some questions about some of the modeling that was done, and I'd perhaps this is for Chair Garofalo. We're in, I think it's week 13 of the legislative session, and one of the bills that has not been heard, even though the chair of the appropriate committee had promised to hear it 3 or 4 weeks ago, is the bill to provide an extension to the deadline for reauthorizing charter schools. So as stands today, about a third of the charter schools across the state will be closing this summer because of the lack of action by this legislature. Perhaps, how does that impact the modeling that was done on the bill around integration aid and other levies if we see a movement of students from charter schools to the traditional publics because of the lack of action?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Dabney, there's obviously a significant interaction there if the policy committee or this legislature were not to act on that matter. In terms of the modeling that you asked about, I do not believe, and Mr. Strong can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe they are modeling a level of closure in charter schools that you are that you alluded to, or else we would see zeros on our spreadsheets. Can you hear me okay? I'm sorry. Yeah. I was...
Yeah, get right into the microphone there.
I'm sorry, Representative Paymar, I asked you to do it, and then I do the exact opposite. So, did you hear that, Representative?
Chair, but it looked like Mr. Strom wanted a piece of this as well.
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, in terms of the property tax impacts, the referendum, the operating referendum, which is the main levy that would vary by pupil count, is based on the resident pupil count in the district. So whether the charter school students return to their resident districts or not would not affect the operating referendum levy. Most of the other levies are not based on a pupil count. For example, the debt levy for the Minneapolis School District is based on the total number of dollars of bonds that district has issued, and so would not vary by the number of students that are attending the school. Instead, it's the dollars that are needed to repay the bonds. So the addition of a substantial number of pupils to any district would modify that district's tax base per pupil unit, and would slightly come into play for those that qualify for equalization. But a district like Minneapolis doesn't qualify for debt equalization. So on that levy for Minneapolis, there would probably be no effect. On a property poor district that had a fair number of students return, that district would be even yet more property poor on a per pupil basis, and so an infusion of students would lead to slightly higher state aid and a lower levy amount because of that change in the pupil's tax base per pupil.
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, then Mr. Strom, there's a potential there that across the state, given the actual distribution of the charter schools that may be closing later this summer, we could see some changes in state aid payments based on what those students do, where they show up in September when school starts.
Mr.
Is that correct?
I'm sorry, Representative Dabney.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Strom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dabney, the change would be quite at the margin, so there'd be very relatively small change in terms of the aid and levy distribution if those children return to the school districts from the charter schools.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Strom.
Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Garofalo, I just have my back to you just to use the mic, so I don't mean anything by it. Representative Garofalo, I did ask a page to go get the House summary. I asked a page to get the House summary, and I don't know if that was an oversight, but members do not have the House summary, just so you know. But I asked a page to get it for me. Can you tell me where in the bill the school shift is?
Representative Garofalo.
First, Mr. Chairman, that was by no means intentional. I don't know why the research summary would not be in the packets.
We don't have runs either.
Oh. Do we have the House Research nonpartisan summary?
I have one. Looks like this.
Okay, we have the tax portion. Every member should have that, the tax portion.
Yeah.
Not for the whole bill. We're not looking at the whole bill.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I know that, but there are a number of tax portions that are in the House summary that are not on the one sheet.
Such
like
as?
Like the school shift. Is that on the one sheeter?
Yes, it is. Mr. Chairman,
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lencheski, the property tax recognition shift is on there.
Representative Lencheski? Oh,
okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Where is the safe schools levy change?
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lencheski, there is no impact in the levy with the safe school levies change.
Representative Lencheski?
Well, Mr. Chair, looking at the House summary, there's a provision on it on Section 25 of the bill. Article 1.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lencheski, it changes the dynamics of it, but it has no levy impact.
Right.
Representative Lencheski?
Well, Mr. Chair, we disagree on if that is a levy tax committee item, but I guess I'll just ask because I'm just trying to find them as I'm going through the bill. I do think, Mr. Chair Garofalo and Mr. Chair, that you know I'm trying to understand the property tax increases for my district. So the delinking of the compensatory has an effect on my levies. Is that right?
No, Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lencheski, no. I don't know how. You have to explain your logic to me on that.
Well, Representative Lencheski.
Well, Mr. Chair, because when we lose state funding, we often then levy.
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lencheski, the base forecast had a 0% increase in the per pupil funding formula. So given your logic, then the fact that the base forecast would do that would have that impact.
Representative Lencheski?
Well, Mr. Chair, so delinking any of the formulas then will have no impact on the base for taxation purposes. Is that what you're saying?
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lencheski, you're going to have to rephrase your question to me because I'm not tracking it.
Representative Lencheski?
Well, maybe you've done something different. If you delink funding in different parts of your bill, and again, I don't serve on your committee and I don't have the information, you're saying that you're writing your bill so that nobody can make up for any changes one way or another in per pupil funding. True levies.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lencheski, perhaps I can explain. We are not delinking the existing portions of the categorical aids that are tied to the general education formula. Those are staying the same. It is only the increases in the per pupil funding formula that are delinked.
Okay.
Representative Lencheski.
Now I understand. Now we synced up. So.
Okay, so going forward.
Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so that helps. And unfortunately for you, I'm also one of the members of those seven school districts who's losing their funding. I you just have a whole bunch of us on this committee. I think here's another one.
I'm not going to put fiscal disparities in my bill, are you?
No. And, you know, Mr. Chair, if I may, Representative Garofalo, I actually, unlike probably some of my colleagues, I don't have such a big deal. I don't really have that huge of a concern about that. But if I just want to understand it, so the city of Bloomington, the school district in Bloomington is going to lose that as one of those seven school districts, and then we can levy it back if we want, and do we require a vote of our residents to do that?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lencheski, under the existing alternative facilities levy program, the other districts that do not receive aid do not have to go to the voters for that approval. Previously, you did not have to go to the voters. Today, you don't have to go to the voters. Tomorrow, you don't have to go to the voters.
Representative Lencheski.
Well, Mr. Chair, okay, thanks for clarifying that. I'm a big fan of having to go to the voters, so I guess I would have liked to see that in there. And I know we have a lot of disagreement in this room on that issue, and we've heard those bills in this room on that issue, and I like that portion. But I do just want to ask then on tax levies, on page 70 of the bill, 70 and 71, I think is where you have how the shift gets paid back. And I know in current law, you know, the shift will get paid back. And as you know, Representative Garofalo, there was a lot of debate about whether, you know, the former majority should have done the school shift. And I don't know what your position was on that, but I will tell you that there was a lot of criticism for the now minority using the school shift and the new majority using the exact same mechanism. Can you tell me in the pages of 70 and 71 your language about the commissioner so schedule the timing of the adjustments and the levy aid recognition time? And is that just to help with cash flow for bond rating for the state, or are you doing something new?
No. And I'll let Mr. Strom chime in here in case I make a mistake. Actually, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lencheski, previous practice has allowed MMB to sort of utilize a third shift, which I believe came through this committee, that the Kreisel-Kelly bill, Greiling bill, when Kelly carried the Kreisel and Greiling authored, where MMB could actually delay payments further to school districts to meet their cash flow accounts. We actually, in the repeal, or take that away. So that is not. Mr. Strom, can you talk about the top of page 71, the commissioner shall schedule the timing of the adjustments?
Mr. Chair, I do understand that now. Hearing
that. Does that make sense?
Yes, we had that bill on the floor.
Yep.
And I think Representative Biskins and I were a couple of only maybe five who voted against that bill, too. And I don't think we should take that power away from the commissioner. But I understand you're just replicating that bill on the floor. I do think that's a nice tool that the state should use, because the school districts are just creatures of us. And I like that reserve and that ability to do that, even though my city was one of the people that had to do that. So I understand that one. So you're saying the timing of repaying of the property tax recognition shift, Ms. Chair Garofalo, is not changed at all in your bill? It's just another 2 years.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lencheski, whenever people say at all, I get nervous, because
okay,
there's differences in pupil units in this bill that are being changed. But under current law, the property tax recognition shift, as you know, once the cash flow and budget reserves are filled up, you start paying back the K-12 shift first, and then you pay back the property tax recognition shift. And Mr. Strom, we're not changing the repayment of that. We're just saying that we pay back the K-12 general education shift in the beginning of fiscal year 14, correct?
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Scroffalo and Lencheski, yes. The payment issue that you see, the new language in the bill, is a very technical matter regarding how the department treats the payment on aids and credits, on the shift on aids and credits. So it's really not significant and not related to the major issue, which is the timing of the repayment of the aid payment shift.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just finally, can you know, just to ask, it's not to question motive, just to genuinely ask, because I don't serve on your committee. And I will tell you, I was a big advocate of using the school shift, and both publicly in my district and internally in my caucus. There were many members of the DFL who didn't want to do that. And I thought to use a shift as opposed to a cut was better if you couldn't get funding. And there was, as you will recall, Chair Groffel, that there was a lot of criticism for that position, and it really not trying to question motives, because I don't know what your position was, but was there a debate on the K-12 committee this year to not just do the shift and to instead either raise revenue for the schools or permanently cut? Because this is a gimmick. It's a big expensive gimmick, and it's got to be paid back, and I'm not casting dispersions, because again, I was for that, and I continue to be for that. But the rhetoric was not quite that last year, and I just want to know, was there an effort in your committee to not use this gimmick?
Chair Garofalo?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Lencheski, candidly, I've always disliked the shift. I've always disliked it because I think that it hides from the public the true size and scope of the challenges that we're facing this session. And you'll note that earlier this year, I moved a bill out of my committee, very unusually standalone, to put the 70-30 in the statute early. That was done as a defensive gesture, Representative Lencheski, because I am concerned that when the chips are down at the end of this session, people are going to be looking at beyond 70-30. So I don't like shifts. I think they hide them from the public, but that's what you should know my position is on it. I think, as is usually the case, you know, when Governor Pawlenty proposed a shift, the legislature would quickly accept it, and I think that's where the center of the discussion was in our committee, or you know, caucusing and in committee. But that was my issues on it, so I'm trying to lock this down at 70-30 because I don't want it to go any farther, Representative Lencheski.
Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Garofalo, I see your taking a little bit of money away from, tax change that was done in just a few years ago, where some money was shifted to cities if there was a maximum reached in school aid. But I do want to say for the committee, you know, you got a little education and occupation tax and taconite taxes here last week, and I just want to tell you, you know, if you look at line 11 there, and you'll see that it picks up a little bit of money in pay 14 or fiscal year 14, pay 13, and it's because, you know, taconite taxes work on a three-year average, and so when you have a huge crash like in 09, which I think was the lowest amount of ore mined since the Depression of 17 million tons, you lose about, well, you have a three-year average of about 39 million. Then you get throw a 17 in there like in 09, and the 17 million tons stays in there for a three-year period. So you see Representative Garofalo is not really going to pick up any money until fiscal year 15, but if there's a crash next year, you know, I guess you'll save it because you picked that money up, but we'll lose again. And members, I did some research a few years back. I'll never forget, and I did it because Tom Pugh had a few elderly women that were definitely in their 80s at the Capitol one day, and he introduced me to them, and one of the elderly women said to me, "Oh, you're from the range. We'll never forget in South St. Paul how you paid for our education," which we did because of the occupation tax in this state for 50 years. For a lot of you in this room who are longtime Minnesotans, your parents or grandparents got educated because of that occupation tax. And, you know, everywhere I look in bills going around here, where you're taking money or monkeying with taconite taxes. And Representative Lincheski talked about her fiscal disparity in ways and means. You know, we spread money from Aiken, 14 school districts, Aiken, Crosby-Arrington, Cook County, Lake County, Greenway of Coleraine, Grand Rapids, Nashua, Kewaunton, Hibbing, Chisholm, Mountain Iron Buell, Virginia, Mesabi East, Ely, and St. Louis County, and maybe five of those school districts have a mine. And they give their money 110 to 110 miles either way, And they give it from the poorest to the richest. It is Robin Hood, and I can't complain because I, like I say, I always supported Robin Hood. So I hope you don't do any more damage in the bill and taconite taxes, Representative Garofalo. If you're doing it, maybe you can tell me about it. But I do want to say one thing because, you know, the only governor we ever had from the range started a program called the Purpose School for the Arts. And you just couldn't help yourself. You had to jazz that Iron Ranger too, didn't you? And you know, it's a personal thing to me because one of my best friends who live in the middle of embarrassed Minnesota, their son got to come to the Purpose School for the Arts. And my girlfriend's daughter got to come to the Purpose School for the Arts. And now nobody from rural Minnesota is going to get to come to the Purpose School for the Arts because you turned it into a charter school. I can tell you this, Representative Garofalo. You know, I think the governor, with his close relationship to the Perpich family and Rudy Perpich, will veto this bill just for that. So you really should think about what you're doing there, because not only are you just giving another shot to somebody, but you are taking an opportunity that was a great opportunity for rural kids away from all of rural Minnesota's children. And, you know, not to mention the people from across the metro area who aren't going to be able to go there either. So I hope you would reconsider that as this bill moves along. And I don't know what the Senate bill has, but, you know, you're too nice a guy to do that, Bonzo.
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, just talking about the taconite general education aid reduction restored, I think it's important for members of the committee to understand how that happened and where this is coming from, because I think perhaps my friend is...
Like it any better than you.
Yeah, okay, so what happened, let's just be clear, in 2009, and I want to be respectful to my friend Representative Lincheski, but in 2009, Senator Bach put a provision in a bill that took this money that was going to schools and took it and redirected it to cities. And then that hole that was created in those cities up there was taken out of the state general education budget to fill in the hole. So in my opinion, that was nothing more than a backdoor LGA increase using the education appropriation. Now, I subsequently learned later that there was a reason why they took the money and only gave it to the cities and not the schools. But Representative Rukavina, that bill, when it came to the floor, the way it was marked, you know, when I was in the minority, I could always read every single line of every single bill, and I pride myself on that. Okay, I take ownership of that, because when I was reading that bill, I got to the last article, and I just gave up, and I stopped reading, and I was tired. And I'll tell you what, if I would have found that provision, I can tell you, I don't think that provision would have became law that year, because nobody on the Education Finance Committee knew about that. And the second I found out about it, and I went and advertised that, people were not happy. Now, it's a small amount of money, but I do believe in transparency. And when that bill came to the floor, it was my fault. Okay, I take ownership of it. But that's how that happened, Representative Rucamina. That money, the money got taken out of the general education budget to be put into those cities' coffers. That's what happened. Now, there's a long history of, you know, things going on here and there, but that's the history of it, Representative. It's a small amount of money, but I want members to know about that. If from nothing else, to know that I'm watching. And that's my friend. That's, I want you to know that.
Representative Rucamina.
Chair, Representative Garofalo, I know that, and other things happened in the tax bill that we weren't aware of, and we didn't know either. And Representative Lanchesi would come to me frantic because all of a sudden she was on a deadline, and a certain Senate tax chair did something else.
Yeah.
And usually,
yeah.
I was the loser, and in fact, none of my city's gains, they paid under this. But people have to understand, when you go from an average of 38 million tons a year, and you have a 17 for 3 years, we lose $16 million in property tax relief, and in school district distributions, and in county distributions, and in city distributions. And we're giving money to cities because they mined ore the last time in 1916. But that's the way it was. So when I hear people talk about fiscal disparity districts and how they're paying in, yeah, listen, dears, all across this room, nobody pays in like me. I got the worst fiscal disparity district in the state, where the poorest property wealth districts pay the richest in taconite taxes. And then I got to see the Doug Johnson Fund disappear, $60 million of it, when I got endowments all over in this state. Your districts, I told you this morning in Ways and Means how much you're getting. Minneapolis, $1,250,000 a year. Places like Osseo in the hundreds of thousands. Representative Biscuits, this represented all across the state. And then the districts where the mines are get like $17,000, $18,000 of that fund. And then you take our endowments. It's kind of... You know, it's not just outright thievery. It's kind of embarrassing. It really is. And I understand your concern with this. I didn't like it any more than you. But it actually lost money because they didn't get any money for 4 or 5 years. And we actually lost money. And all it did was shift money again from some poorer school districts to some richer cities in the taconite tax relief area. But when I hear across, and it's not on... just on your side of the aisle, it's on ours, about how we're getting everything. I'll challenge, and I have for 25 years, anybody in this room to show me whose district gives more than the range districts forever. We're the one that keep on giving and giving. You get $1,250,000 next year because of the range, and you get $600 to $700 million because 222 endowed chairs and endowed staff at the University of Minnesota bring in 222 of them are getting a salary, and research people because of that. And you people don't like mining, some of you, but you love the money.
And Mr.
You
Chair,
love the money. Mr. And so all I'm saying, and then I'll shut up and leave, but don't pick on the Purpich School for the Arts and deprive those rural kids of a wonderful experience, because I personally know two of them that had a wonderful experience. And that's what you do by eliminating this. And your bill's going to get vetoed just over that provision. I'm sure of it.
Representative Rucamina?
Yes, sir.
I like mining.
You used to have mining. People don't know that.
Mines. Yeah. That's right. Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rucamina, your district does give more to the state of Minnesota than any other district because they give us you.
I'm going to cry.
Representative Rucamina? You have the floor, sir.
I'm crying. I can't help it.
Okay. Representative Biscuits.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm going to pass down the spreadsheet. Mr. Strom, if you would look at the spreadsheet, the education finance levies, and turn to page 3. And I'm going to point out line 193. Today in Ways and Means, we had the pleasure of hearing about a fine piece of legislation, the omnibus tax bill.
Fine piece.
Fine piece of legislation. Mr. Strom, in that omnibus tax bill, the market value homestead credit is eliminated. So I don't know if it's going to take another run or if the effects are negligible. If that were, that's one bill, Representative Rukavina, that I'm sure the governor is going to sign into law as soon as it hits his desk. What effect would that elimination have on this run, Mr. Strom?
Mr. Strom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, there's quite a bit of interplay between that and the school school levies. There's a small effect in terms of the aid levy mix, but the primary effect is on the shift, and that shift has been accounted for in the K-12 bill to match the actions of the tax bill. So even though you see a line item here carrying on line 193 carrying that amount, that's because this is reflecting just the K-12 portion on that line. But the shift line, the total shift numbers reflect the elimination of the market value credit. So built into the shift numbers is the elimination of that credit for purposes of allocating the shift.
Okay.
Representative Biskins.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Strom. The last thing, Representative Rukavina, leave. Oh, that's too bad, because I wanted to share with him one of my favorite skits by Monty Python about Denny Moore, the Robin Hood, who Robin Hood on steroids, didn't know when to quit stealing from the rich and giving to the poor, and in fact ended up taking money from the same people over and over again till he was eventually taking from the poor and giving to the rich. And we have to guard against that. So we can cheer for Robin Hood, I guess, only so far.
Representative Carlson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that piece of legislation that was alluded to by Representative Rukavina, I'll just comment, but I do have some questions. On the endowed chairs, if he were here, I would thank him in the same way I did Representative Lincheski the other day when I sent her a thank you note on a different amendment. But I did carry that legislation on the endowed chairs, and it turned out to be a highly successful, you know, it was originally $1 million per endowed chair at the University of Minnesota. But that he is right, that funding for that came out of the Iron Range by and large. But I would have told him that it is a statewide asset that we have up there, and that the university is a statewide asset. But anyway, that's not where I was headed. You know, I referenced my concern on your bill earlier today, Mr. Chairman, about the property tax increases, and I think the estimate is roughly potentially $1.2 billion. And what I want to do is get on the record then what the potential property tax increase in this bill is, because I think it's important that we keep track of that accumulative number. And so if Mr. Strom could tell me what the potential net number is on property taxes for the record in your bill.
I can answer.
Representative Groffel? Representative Groffel?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I can give it to you. Zero.
I didn't hear you. I'm
Representative Carlson, if you could talk to the microphone, please.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I can give you the number. It's zero.
There is zero impact on property taxes in this bill.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson.
I'm talking about the statewide impact, and that's not the way I'm reading it, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, if you look on the property tax-related issues summary that's handed out to you, the levy target for this is zero.
Representative Carlson?
Yeah, I think I'd like to. I originally asked Mr. Chairman staff on that, yep. And I think I'd like to get a clarification from staff then if there's a. One of the reasons I ask it, I used to chair the Education Committee, and my follow up question is going to be if, in terms of if you had a tails target or if you're monitoring the tails. But let's address this first question. First, Mr. Strom, do you see a potential property tax increase? And remember, when I chaired the Education Committee, we used to look at the various local levies and so on and look at what that accumulative number was. I think I remember one year when the cap in terms of levy increases was like $100 million. We couldn't go over that. And we had to count local bills into that number and so on. You may remember that, Mr. Strom, or maybe Mr. Crow. Can you provide us with a number, or do you agree that it's zero?
Mr.
Strom?
Mr. Chair, committee members, there is a three-page printout in your packet labeled Education Finance Levies, the one that Representative Biskins was just referencing. And in terms of levies, the way that the K-12 world works is essentially the levy target is compared to base for that year. And so if you look on the third page of this printout, at the very bottom line on line 197, you'll see total certified levy after credits, and you'll see a zero in that column. So measured toward base for payable 12, which is the levies that go with fiscal year 13, the levy increase over base in that year is zero. In terms of the future years, 14, the fiscals 14 and 15, which is taxes payable in 13 and taxes payable in 14, is also on that sheet, and you can see some very small changes in those 2 years. But in fiscal year 13, taxes payable in 2012, the difference from base is zero in terms of the property tax impact statewide. As we discussed earlier, there's some distributional shifts, but statewide the change is zero compared to base.
Representative Carlson.
And that's what I wanted to find out, Mr. Chairman, because that's an issue that I think I'm going to be monitoring relatively closely. Let me ask my second question then, Mr. Chairman, dealing with the TAILS costs. I keep hearing that the various finance bills that are going through the process have a lot of TAILS. And what are the TAILS, Mr. Strom, in this bill?
Mr. Strom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, on the levy worksheet, you can see that there's a very tiny amount compared to base for the middle column there, which is fiscal 14, the first year of the TAILS year. There's a $25,000 increase, and in the following year, an $800,000 decrease, so really negligible in both years compared to base for the levy target. In terms of the state aids, which I'm not sure if the chair wants to get into or not, the printout for the state aids is on a separate printout, and there are the TAILS numbers for those years compared to base as well. So, Mr. Chair, that information, I'm not sure where you want me to go with that, but we could go into some detail or get additional copies if not all members have the aid spreadsheet for the aid side of it.
Representative Carlson. And again, members, let's keep it to the property tax issues and the tax issues in the bill.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I think all of my questions, Mr. Chairman, other than my comments for Representative Rukavina, have been on the tax issue. As I mentioned earlier in another committee, you know, we have going through the pipeline some potentially very major property tax increases across the state, and this bill apparently, fortunately, does not impact then on property taxes, but I wanted to make sure that that was clear, or at least and that was one of the reasons I was asking about the statewide, and I was trying not to be parochial. I'm not sure what it does in Robbinsdale, but I'll find out from Mr. Strom a little bit later. I have a feeling that because we're part of that group of school districts, in fact, I shouldn't say I have a feeling, I know.
Folks, Carlson has the floor.
So we'll stop at, I guess, at this point. Those were the major questions that I had. I have a lot of other issues on the bill when it gets before Ways and Means, but be waiting for that day.
And Mr. Chairman?
Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I want to apologize. I sort of tersely swatted your question to the side and answered it in an abbreviated fashion when you answered it for Mr. Strom, and I should have showed you better respect. I didn't mean to do that. That was an item of significant conversation in the committee with regards to levies. So I kind of showed my cards there.
There was, Mr. Chairman, if I may, one question that I did ask, because I asked this is of the chair of Ways and Means on the TAILS question, and I know they're minimal, but her comment was that she hadn't received any guidance from on high. This bill isn't through the process yet. I'm not sure totally what she meant from that, other than I can probably pretty well guess. But again, my main point is that I think we should monitor what the potential impact on all of these bills that rely in one way or another on property taxes would be. And the other point would be it can impact on different school districts differently, as we just pointed out, and also on different properties. So before Ways and Means, I'll probably visit with maybe Mr. Strom and Mr. Crow about some of the issues I'm concerned about. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, Representative Garofalo, but I'm a little confused about a question I asked you before. My understanding is if your bill doesn't go into effect, if we don't pass it, then school districts get base funding. Is that right?
Chair Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hartman, if we don't pass a bill, they don't get anything.
Okay.
Representative Hartman?
Well, excuse me. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hartman, if we don't pass any bill, certain appropriations will go to school districts. Special education, integration, and other aids would not go to school districts based off the special magistrate's decision in 2005. So it is, they would get something, but it would be, it's just not an option. So
okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hartman.
My question is how the base relates to the funding in your bill, because what I understand to be the case for the Osseo School District is that we're $78 per pupil under the base in 12 and 13, and doing the math on 20,000 students, that's $1.6 million less than base. And can you explain to me how I could explain to the Osseo School District that that's not a cut?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hartman, if you're using spending levels that haven't taken place yet as your basis for how much money you're getting, then you can say that that is less. However, if you're using spending levels that you got this year and then comparing it to next year's levels will be higher. So if your definition of base, if you're using your definition of base as being what's going forward, then it is less. But if it's using your definition of what you got last year, it is more.
Representative Hartman?
And
Representative Hartman, I would encourage you to look at those. If you're using the base numbers, I would encourage you to look at Anoka-Hennepin as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But
Hartman?
I'm curious about the interplay between the alternative facilities switching from aid to levy in Anoka-Hennepin and the increase in year one. I know there's a decrease in year two over base for Anoka-Hennepin, and I'm wondering if the amount that we lose in alternative facility aids is more than the amount that we potentially gain in the per pupil allocation.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hartman, I do not have every district memorized, but in the case of Anoka-Hennepin, I can assure you the answer is no.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Another question that came out from your conversation with Representative Carlson about the property tax impact. I asked you about the alternative facilities aid switching to levy, and you said the impact of that would be $19 million, and then the ties thing is $625,000. So if that's a $19.625 million increase for those districts, and the net impact of the bill is zero, is somebody getting a reduction in property taxes where I'm getting an increase in property taxes?
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hartman, having not been to your house and knowing what school district, I can't answer your specific question, but I can tell you that, yes, just like with last year's education bill, where there were different property tax interactions for different school districts, some school districts were protected to have higher property taxes. The operating capital portion was used to make sure that the statewide levy target was zero. That same interaction is at play in this year. Candidly, the idea for using the operating capital I got from you guys, because you did it last year.
Representative Hartman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, two-thirds of my district is the Osseo School District, one-third is Anoka-Hennepin. It sounds like I'm a net loser under this bill, and I plan to be voting no.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hartman, you're always a winner in my book.
Representative Erickson.
I'll pass, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Chairman Garofalo. I am trying really hard to skim through the materials that we've gotten and see what the interactions are. And support for our children with disabilities as well as adults with disabilities is sort of a three-legged tool. Some of it comes from the school district, some of it comes from county property tax levies, and some of it comes through state and federal funds. And in the Health and Human Services bill, the largest cuts are to people with disabilities on waivers, many of whom are families with children with disabilities. And the PCA cuts that have been enacted and all those sorts of things. And I see on your spreadsheets that there's a significant cut, about 10%, in the health and development screening, which is how we identify kids early on, I believe, as well as school readiness. And then there's also a cut in adults with disability aid. And I see that the levies for that are flat. So I'd like to hear
Chair
how
Groff,
that all works.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loft, that's the interactions of the shift. We didn't cut those. The forecast was 90-10. I didn't touch any of those items. It was 90-10. So if you look at those numbers, if you match it up with, if you match them up with the first year appropriation, you'll see it's about 20%. That's the shift.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Loeffler.
Sorry.
Thank you. That's what I was just trying to understand, because I know I've heard complaints that the school districts aren't doing enough outreach early enough to identify kids and get them into programs that oftentimes can help. I mean, particularly if they have visual or developmental disabilities or hearing losses that aren't caught early, you can actually influence their ability to not need special ed if you get there early.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I only wanted to ask for a roll call, but also to thank Representative Garofalo for coming to the Tax Committee, as he should have. And it's nice that he did. And Mr. Chair, and thank you for making sure that these tax items that are in another omnibus bill got before this committee. I think that's the way the process is supposed to work. I will say, Mr. Chair, you have a lot heavier lifting to do for your caucus. And Representative Garofalo, you know, the K-12 chairs, they don't want to hear this, but they always have it the easiest. You know, everybody puts them in first place and sort of doesn't make them do, you know, a lot of cutting. And, you know, Mr. Chair, you're going to be doing cutting one way or another. And I do hope that, you know, Representative Garofalo appreciates that in the process of the chairs. You know, I'd say this to Representative Greiling all the time, too. And then I would tell people locally, you know, as far as the funding game around here, education's usually, you know, in first place. But I do want a roll call, because I know we're not talking, we're focused on the tax items here, but I think it's fair to say many of us in this room are very concerned about the non-tax items in this bill, and that's why I'm going to be voting no, is on the non-tax items. So we can't get into them, but I would request a roll call.
Okay. We have a roll call requested. Representative Groffel, would you like to wrap it up? First of all, do we have any amendments on the tax items? Okay, we promise to go get a few members that are in other committees. So, Representative Groffel, if you could wrap it up, and then we will take the roll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How much filler time do you need here?
until Representative Knuth comes, if you could just wrap it up, we will start taking the roll, but we will not close the roll until Representative Knuth is here.
No, you know, Mr. Chairman and members.
Because she'd like to vote against your bill.
Thank you. I mean, Representative Chesky, first I want to thank the members of the committee for a good dialogue. And this is just, I hope members just have a little glimpse into the world of education finance and what it is we deal with. Because, you know, I have a Paymar head back staring at the ceiling meter, and I think it was up to about 15 today during the hearing. So, no, it is very challenging. But all, I want members to realize, you know, all rhetoric aside, you know, it's not an easy choice to do this stuff, and the members of the majority caucus have made education funding a priority. And I think that says a lot about the members of our caucus, also the members of our committee, who have worked very hard to preserve that. And so, Mr. Chairman, I do know that there are going to be many difficult choices going forward. And with a deficit this size, there are no easy options. And I want to thank the members of the committee for a thoughtful and reasonable dialogue in the debate. And Representative Carlson, you already got me scared about Ways and Means for tomorrow. I'm already wondering. But I want to thank the members of the committee for a good discussion.
Okay. Seeing no amendments at all, the committee legislative assistant will take the roll call.
Representative Davids?
Yes.
Representative Loon?
Yes.
Representative Lenchusky? Representative Anderson?
Yes.
Representative Bills?
Yes.
Representative Biskins?
No.
Representative Carlson?
No.
Representative Crawford?
Yes.
Representative Dabney?
No.
Representative Depke?
Yes.
Representative Downey is excused. Representative Drazkowski?
Yes.
Representative Erickson?
Yes.
Representative Garofalo?
Yes.
Representative Gottwald's excused. Representative Hortman?
No.
Representative Kiffmeyer?
Yes.
Representative Knuth?
No.
Representative Coonan's excused. Representative Lesh is excused. Representative Loeffler?
No.
Representative Mack?
Yes.
Representative Marquardt?
No.
Representative Myra?
Yes.
Representative Paymar?
No.
Representative Rukavina? Oh, he's excused. Representative Runbeck?
Yes.
Representative Tilbury? Oh, he's excused. Representative Wardlow?
Yes.
And while the committee legislative assistant is tallying the vote here, Representative Garofalo, thank you for presenting House File 934 to the Tax Committee. And the motion was, again, members, that the House File 934 be recommended, passed, and sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. There being 14 ayes and 9 nays, the motion prevails. Committee members, again, we will have our next Tax Committee meeting at the call of the chair. Thank you for your work this evening and your work since session started. I really appreciate it. Good government all the time. We are adjourned. You know, that has a better